And we want to make sure that our donors have a fantastic experience giving to our organization and then our mission.
Welcome to episode 6 of the new Center for Generosity podcast. I'm Mitzi Schaefer, a consultant with GSB Fundraising and your host. We are so excited to have you here with us today. On each episode, we work to equip generosity leaders by tackling a single topic, just one topic related to growing generosity to your organization. Together, friends, we answer the 3 most critical questions for success related to this topic. We're in the middle of a 6-week series on how nonprofit leaders can be donor first. And today, my friend and GSB consultant, Paul Marsh, is going to talk about donor recognition. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you, Mitzi. It's great to be here.
So tell us where you are right now, because I'm in South Carolina. Where are you?
I'm actually in Loveland, Colorado, which is about an hour north of Denver. And we've lived here for the last 5 years, but in 2 days, I'm actually moving to downtown Denver. And so we're making a big switch from a large house to a very small apartment. So life is interesting today.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. That's awesome. Well, good luck on your move. And thanks for taking the time to hang out with us today on the podcast as we talk about donor recognition. So, friends, you know that Paul is moving, but I want to tell you just a little bit more about Paul. So you know that for almost 3 decades, are you like ancient, Paul? You're really
okay, that's enough. No old jokes.
For 3 decades, Paul has championed generosity through philanthropy and volunteerism. His own experiences of leadership and fundraising in higher education, social advocacy, international relief, and service as a volunteer firefighter provide a breadth of knowledge and expertise across the fundraising profession. As a consultant with GSB since 2009, he is a certified fundraising executive. Paul works with clients and teaches workshops all across the United States, coaching organizations through best practices in executive leadership, strategic planning, fundraising for capital campaigns, annual funds, and major gift appeals, all things that need significant donor recognition. So, Paul, thanks for being here with us today.
I'm excited. Thanks, Mitzi.
Yeah. Okay. So, as we promise our donors in every episode, we're going to get right to the point because the world is busy and they want actionable results. And so, here we go, friend.
Sounds good.
Question number one, related to donor recognition. And I do, before I ask you this question, I do just want to remind folks, we've been talking about what it means to be donor first and to make deposits into the lives of donors. And donor recognition is truly one of the most important ways that we can do that. And so first off, Paul, your first question, why is it important to have a program or a process even for donor recognition?
Well, that's a good question, Mitzi. And really, it boils down to what you just said, making deposits in our donors. And we want to make sure that our donors have a fantastic experience giving to our organization and then our mission. And so in order to make that a great experience, what we want to do is recognize them through the act of gratitude. So if you think back to the 5 steps in getting a gift, we identify our prospects, we inform, we inspire, we ask, and then we thank. And so that gratitude encompasses a great deal of donor recognition. So that's really the crux of the issue. It is a process. It's a part of the process, I should say, that is endemic in every donor interaction that we have. So if you think of a circle, that gratitude process, that donor recognition leads to another set of informing, inspiring, inviting, and thanking. So putting that in perspective, that's the first reason it's so crucial, is it is just a cemented part of that donor process. In addition to that, we really want to lift up donors because when donors give and when they are recognized for that generosity, what happens is they become role models for others who are considering being donors to your organization. And so as we recognize our donors, there are others looking on saying, you know, that could be me as well. I really like what they're doing at that organization. I really buy into that mission. And John and Mary over here are being generous, and I think I could do the same thing. Now, people don't really think in those terms, but you get the idea, right? It is serving as a role model for others to step up and be generous. And so those two things, making donors feel good about their giving and then serving as role models to others, that's the crucial two reasons that we want to have a donor recognition process or program.
That's great. And that really ties back into that donor first conversation we've been having about also what it means to create a join me culture. I love that. That's perfect.
You're absolutely right. It really does make it easy for the fundraiser or the executive director to go to a donor prospect and along with, say, a peer who has already been generous, who's given. When they see that recognition of that donor, then they can say, join me, become part of this effort. Interesting story. I was a fundraiser for a large organization a number of years ago. And one of my colleagues in the office, another fundraiser, introduced me to a nonprofit organization in the Twin Cities. And it's a nonprofit garage. So essentially they provide mechanic services at low or no cost to the working, what they call the working poor. And so I was intrigued by the organization and their mission. And so I started giving, you know, $15. And the next thing I was thanked, you know, properly. And, you know, it was all a result of that join me invitation. And what happened was I'm now a monthly donor and helping them with a capital campaign. And it's all because of that invitation, that join me. And I saw another donor being generous. So it is part of that overall process.
Well done. What a great organization. I just love that concept. And thanks for sharing that. it's also helpful as fundraisers to know that we're also giving and that we understand what it means to be on both sides of that generosity journey and that generosity story. So I appreciate that witness.
That's absolutely. I don't know that we can be effective fundraisers without being generous donors as well.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Okay, so let's hit number two. You ready?
Mm-hmm. I am.
Okay, so I know most nonprofit organizations are concerned about the cost for a donor recognition program and the human resources necessary to implement that. It can feel like it could be a giant. Can you share some ideas for easy and affordable donor recognition tactics?
Absolutely. So when you talk about donor recognition, many fundraisers automatically think of that big wall hanging that has the nameplates of all the donors as you walk into a building, right? Well, that is certainly a piece of donor recognition, but those are typically thousands of dollars and it's an ongoing expense. And many of our nonprofit organizations really don't have that kind of wherewithal financially to do huge productions. So what I tend to suggest is think creatively and engage your constituency, because in every constituency, there are stakeholders with wonderful gifts of artistry, of creativity that we can bring to bear and our donor recognition program. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's really simple things to do from just having your board of directors hold a thank-a-thon after a board meeting, set aside 30 minutes when they can call new donors at a certain level and just thank them for their generosity. That is a donor recognition tactic, and it is absolutely worthwhile. It's personal, and it really means a great deal to the donor and to the board member themselves. That's one way you can do that in addition to regular thank you letters. You know, I worked for a university years ago in the early to mid 90s, and we would actually every year sit outside the dining hall, and we would have note cards, envelopes, and stamps. And we had alerted our scholarship recipients at that university that they could stop by that table. And we were there for about a week, 3 or 4 days maybe, before the meals. They could stop by that table and write a thank you, a handwritten thank you note to their scholarship donors. And it was actually a requirement that they do so, but we made it as easy as possible. And so the donors received that note card. And actually, I'm a scholarship donor myself. And so to this day, you know, almost 30 years later, I still receive handwritten thank you notes from those scholarship recipients. What's also neat is that at that same university, we had an annual scholarship luncheon where new scholarship donors were recognized publicly. But they also, all the scholarship donors got to sit with the scholarship recipients over a meal and meet those students and listen to the exciting future that those donors have enabled. And so that was always a special time. There's a meal, right? So there's some cost involved with it. There's some planning, but that can be assuaged a little bit by having a donor sponsor that meal. You know, there are a lot of different options for lowering the cost. That leads into the concept of a gratitude gathering, which is really just an opportunity for donors to gather together for a meal again. I think food is crucial in these efforts. And actually have them hear from the CEO and other organizational leaders about what is going on at the organization, talking about the mission, and then thanking those donors on an annual basis. What really happens is that those donors, as they go to scholarship luncheon after scholarship luncheon or gratitude gathering after gratitude gathering, they build their own community, which is an incredible thing to see. Because when that donor community is built and when those relationships are fostered, they get to challenging each other as donors to your organization. And so what happens is they rise up in that, if you think of your donor pyramid, they rise up from a first-time donor to a renewed donor to an upgraded donor and further. And that those relationships last for years and years. And it's absolutely wonderful to see. The last thing I would suggest is that you really look, as I mentioned earlier, look at your constituency, see where you have some creative people, some artists, some sculptors, and invite them to commission a special piece that you can replicate and give to donors at a certain level. When you use something like that, it becomes far more special and important to the donor and something they want to portray publicly, you know, put on a desk or on a shelf in their home or in their office. And it becomes far more special than just, say, a plaque that looks like every other plaque or every other, you know, crystal flame on their desk. And so I really encourage clients to think creatively, think outside the box, and engage your staff and your constituency in thinking of creative ideas for donor recognition that don't cost a lot.
Yeah. And a couple things that came to mind, that was exceptional information. A couple of thoughts that I kind of pinged on. One, you know, Mike Ward, one of our other GSB consultants, he gives honey away. He's a beekeeper. and he gives honey away, and it's a fun thing, and he enjoys it, and it's a personal touch.
It's unique, right?
In the marketing world, in the sales marketing world, we would call that a talk trigger.
Exactly.
Something that makes people think about you and talk about you. But I also really appreciate what it means to have scholarship recipients and those who have given sitting next to each other and building those relationships and connecting that community, because ultimately the work of a nonprofit is to build community and to build relationships and bring the world closer together. And most nonprofits, that pretty much is what they do in some kind of special form or another. And so being able to have people sitting together and inform them is a true act of being donor first. And it's also teaching those recipients how to be generous in the future and what it means to have been the recipient and how they can then pay that forward in the future. So what a beautiful way to do that. Thanks for sharing.
Oh, you took the words right out of my mouth. And it really, it's across the sector, right? It's not just universities. It's not just outdoor camps. It's not just social service agencies. I had a donor once. I was working for a social service agency in Texas and was visiting with a major donor, and we had, you know, plaques, right? That's what I was delivering. And she said, "Oh, this is nice." And really was thinking to herself, "This is just another plaque." I could tell. I mean, that's the way she really said it. She said, "You know, I give to an organization where children make cookies and then deliver the cookies to me. And I just love that." And, you know, I thought that was such a great learning experience as a fundraiser, right? Mm-hmm. Here I am with a very nice plaque that probably cost 20 or 30 bucks. And when really what had made a difference in her life as a donor was that interaction between her gift and the beneficiaries. And I assure you, those cookies didn't cost nearly $20. But it really stuck in her mind. And when you think about donor first, donor centricity, we really need to take account of those moments when we're taught by our donors what is meaningful to them, as opposed to our telling them what is meaningful to them, right?
Oh, well said, Paul. And the other thing I learned during the pandemic, especially, is that there are also virtual ways to thank our donors. And we did, you know, we had the staff, because it was a camp, we had the staff say thank you to donors on a video. And then we shared that and we posted it on social media. We put it in emails, but also when we were communicating with donors, when we were saying, "Hey, we just got your gift," we would attach that video to the personal email. And then we would get way more responses back from donors saying, "Thank you."
Yes. Yes. And those videos don't have to be edited. They don't have to be glossy. They don't have to be beautiful. We, at an international relief agency I worked at, we got a 30-second raw video of our country director in Western Africa interviewing a beneficiary, a woman farmer who was sharing her success story. Mm-hmm. And she was out in the field showing these crops that were just going gangbusters, right? They were just having wonderful success. And it was just 30 seconds. And as I said, it was on an iPhone. It was raw video. We got it in our office in Minneapolis and shared it with some of our major donors. And we've never had that kind of response. It does not. The authenticity matters. And when you are authentic, whether it's pretty or not, it means so much more to a donor than a spiffed up, you know, 8-minute video that costs $50,000.
You got that right. Exactly. Well said. All right. So That was a great deeper dive on that. Thanks for that. And now let's do our question number three. So what are three things? We like threes around here.
We do. Yes. Yes.
What are three things to remember when putting together a donor recognition program?
So three actionable things. Really, the first thing is do what you can to get the beneficiary closer to the donor, anything at all. So we talked about those scholarship luncheons, the gratitude gatherings, whether it's a video that you can share from those beneficiaries, anything you can do to make that connection between the donor's gift, their generosity, and the result, the resulting benefit to people who need help. That's the first thing, is think through that. How do we make that happen? Now, there are some organizations, and I've worked for some, led some, where confidentiality is an issue, but you can still do something where those beneficiaries pass along a thank you in some form or fashion without breaking that confidentiality in those organizations. And so that's the first thing.
If I could just like tag onto that. So I worked with an organization for abused and neglected children. Mm-hmm. And connecting the donor and the child, we did that through mentorship. So there were other ways that we were able to do that. But also I found that connecting the cottage parent, like the person working directly with the client,
yeah,
also was just as powerful because the donors understood about that confidentiality. And so connecting the caseworker, even the caseworker or the cottage parent with them in different ways and saying thank you, and them hearing the story of progress in the client from that staff person was also just as important of a connection between the donor and the beneficiary.
Right. And it's interesting because I too led an organization that worked with primarily children who had experienced severe sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And so obviously confidentiality was paramount there. And what we did was we created a video that had the caregiver's voice in the background without identification, talking about how the center had helped them and gotten them through a very difficult and terrible time in their lives. While on the video, it was actually showing artwork by those children, again, without any identifiers. And so you had some sense of that first person experience, which meant a lot to the donors. And we could show that at a gratitude gathering without breaking any sense of confidentiality. So,
yeah, that's great.
The second thing I think really is use your resources. Look at your constituency, look at your group of stakeholders for your organization and find those artists, those creatives, the sculptors, whoever they may be, and invite them to start thinking about how they can be a part of this donor recognition program. What can they create to encourage donors to be generous and to recognize those donors with something unique and special and meaningful for that organization that represents your organization. So it's really important to scour your database and really think through who do you have in your stakeholders who could bring their gifts to bear in that sense. And then finally, it's a great way, just be creative, right? Bring together your staff, but also other stakeholders, and really just those people who like to think outside the box and figure out what is something unique to your organization that you could use in your donor recognition program. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a tchotchke or you know, a piece of sculpture or a painting. But it could be some kind of program that is meaningful. If it's bringing people to camp, if it is a gratitude gathering of some kind at a special location. But be creative and think through what would be meaningful for your donors.
Yeah, perfect. Oh, that's so great. I love it. And I know we're of the mind of three here, but I want to add one more thing, because I'm thinking about a couple of clients that I work with who get a sense of being overwhelmed. Yes. About the right way or the perfect way or all the ways to do donor recognition. And they let it sort of cripple them, right? It like makes it freezes them in their tracks. And so they either do one of two things. They do nothing. Mm-hmm. They just stick with their little personal thank you note, and that's all they do. Or they spend all their time trying to build this big thing that doesn't you just cannot maintain. And I think what I'm hearing in what you're saying is, first off, make it personal. I love just the simplicity of whatever you can do to connect the donor and the beneficiary together. That is really what we're trying to accomplish here. But don't be so grandiose that you can't navigate it for any significant amount of time, because you also have to do all the other things that you have to do. And so give yourself permission to create something that you know you can be consistent, that you can manage, that you can get people to help you with. And I think just sometimes it's helpful to just have permission.
Yes.
From someone else to not have to just go all out.
That's right. And what you're really doing as a fundraiser is you are starting a tradition here.
Yeah.
And so you want it to be able to be replicated year after year after year, because when you do start something like that, and then it's 10 years down the road, it's far easier, it's far cheaper, and your donors look forward to it. That is actually something that they look forward to, whether it is, again, an event or a little tchotchke or a combination of the two. But that's why it has to be meaningful, because you are starting a donor tradition. And so you're absolutely right. You've got to give yourself permission to make it manageable. That is crucial.
That's exactly right. And one of the tenets of being donor first is consistency.
Yes, so that is exactly.
Perfect. Exactly. That is perfect. Great. Well, Paul, this has been fun. I so appreciate you taking the time to be here with us and to share this, you know, kind of first glimpse into what it means to be donor first. I know we are going to have you back on the podcast in the future with other topics as we start hitting some other series ideas. And, you know, friends who are listening, if you want to send us an email, send us an email at mitzie@gsbfr.com. What topics do you want? Like, what do you want us to be talking about on this podcast? What do you need help with? What do you want to process? Let us know, and we'll be happy to add that. And if you want to hear more about donor recognition or other things from Paul, let us know that too. And we'll be sure to add that into future episodes. But thanks for sharing. That is our time for today, friends. And so we want to just remind you that you can join our brand new Center for Generosity that started on September 1st. It is a place where you can gather with other professionals like you for accountability, focus, tools, and plans to grow generosity to your organization. You have an impact. Your organization has an impact, just like those organizations that Paul talked about today. Let's make sure that the world knows about that impact so that others will want to support your mission and your passion as well. With a monthly subscription to the center, you get exclusive access to regular roundtable discussions. Paul is going to be one of our consultants leading roundtable discussions, and you'll have office hours after. So the day, for example, that Paul leads a roundtable, that afternoon, you'll be able to have office hours with him. And so that's part of the access that you get from the center. You will have ongoing access to documents and videos that train and outline best practices for CEOs, development officers, volunteers, send your volunteers to the center, and your board members. And you will get more out of them if they understand what it is you're trying to accomplish with your development work. We are also launching some special programs, and for a list of those, you can visit the center. Let's see, you can visit www.centerforgenerosity.com. All smashed together, the word "the" is not in there. It's just centerforgenerosity.com. And best part is your first month is free, so you can try it out and not have to stress about that if you want to just try it and see. So next time, we will be back here on September the 28th, and we're going to be switching the seats a little. You met Mike Ward on episode 3, and he is going to be hosting this next episode so that I can answer questions on storytelling for engagement. And Paul, a lot of what Paul talked about today when it comes to donor recognition is connecting that story, connecting that recipient to the donor. And that is best done through storytelling as a part of your recognition program. And so next week, we're going to talk about a special model that we used called Saga that I actually developed for my work and have been very successful using. And so we'll do a little deeper dive into that next week. And I look forward to having you there. Thanks, listeners.